Blind Cool Tech 198, October 29, 2005. Hey y'all, how are you? I'm Larry Skutkan, your host for this edition of Blind Cool Tech. And in the office with me once again is our resident audio expert, Rob Meredith.
Hey, how you doing?
We'd like to try to clear up some confusion that people have had about the Olympus and the differences between the bits per second and the sample rate. And we had a pretty good discussion the other day about what exactly the sample rate is. You want to just kind of review that right quick before we go into the bits per second?
Okay, a sample rate is the number of times that we essentially take note of what the signal level is, what the signal actually is at the input, and store that information. So on a CD, we take essentially 44,100 snapshots per second of the recorded source material and write down what that value is. And we write it down real fast so that when we play it back, we read it real fast, and it sounds quite a bit like the original. That's how digital audio works.
And the Olympus does support 44,100, so that's good. And so does the iRiver IFP-899. Now, this bits per second is where all the confusion is coming in, because we discovered the other day that, you know, we had this discussion where the quality of the sound on the WS2 didn't seem to be, WS200S, I should say, didn't seem to be up to par with the DS2 or the iRiver IFP-899. And what made the confusion even a little more, well, Rob discovered that the WS200S does not have a sample rate that goes as high as what the other two do.
Bit rate.
Oh, man, that's really going to confuse things. Yes, the bits per second, the bit rate. So the DS2 had 128 kbps, and the iRiver with the updated firmware had 96 kbps.
Right.
But the WS200S only had 64, and what made things even more confusing was that a guy on the BCT mailing list, Grant, I believe it was, wrote Olympus a letter, and they expressed a little confusion. They said they didn't change anything. So let's talk about what is bits per second.
Okay. Bits per second is the approximate number of bits that would flow through the data path per second. I mean, I can't think of a way much more to simplify it. Essentially, it's the amount of throughput required to accomplish a particular compression rate. So you can judge the size of a file if you know the bits per second, because there's 8 bits in a byte, so you can easily figure out bytes per second, and then you say how many seconds you've recorded, for example. You can multiply those values out and approximate the size that the output file should be.
Now the sample rate's always going to be higher than the bits per second, correct? Because, there's two things going on here. The sample rate is not expressed in bits. It's expressed in 16-bit values.
Actually, the sample rates are generally lower, because we're talking about 128,000 bits per second.
Okay.
Versus 44,100 hertz per second.
Okay.
Samples per second. Now, I want to clear up as best I can, off the cuff, without a calculator. And I'm not real good at doing math in my head, so. they're interrelated, but they're not interdependent. So the default operating mode for MP3, the goal of the MP3 Standards Committee when they were developing MP3 was to come up with a file format that had a bit rate or throughput of 128,000 bits per second, and sound as close to CD quality as possible. That's their goal. There were earlier versions, like, for example, Layer 1, MP3 Layer 1, or MPEG layer 1, I should say, and layer 2, and then layer 3, which is where we are now with MP3, the different layers had different goals. Like, one of them, I think, was 192. So, to them, it sounded good enough at 192, where when they improved the standard, they were able to get it to sound good enough at 128. So the lower we can get that number to be, the less data it requires to have a reasonably good sound and signal. So if we operate on the assumption that the standard operating bit rate of MP3 is 128,000, then we can begin to look at some of the other parameters that comprise the signal, and those are, as we mentioned before, the sample rate, bits per sample, and the number of channels. Now, in a standard MP3 128K BPS file, we generally use a sample rate of 44,100, since that's what CDs use. We always use 16 bits per channel when we discuss MP3 encoding, and we use one or two channels, depending on the original source material. There's other variations of MP3, like joint stereo and such, that we're not going to really get into much here, but essentially the figures all work out the same. Now, that doesn't mean that any 128K BPS MP3 file you put your hands on necessarily has a sample rate of 44.1. It's very likely that it will, but there's nothing in the specification that says it has to. The sample rate is actually contained in each frame of the MP3 data. So you could have, for example, a sample rate of 22,050, half the normal CD rate, and still have 128K BPS. So that's one area of confusion. So like I said, they're interrelated but not interdependent. The third area of confusion is the frequency response or frequency range of a given compression scheme. As we discussed earlier, the Nyquist frequency is the highest frequency that can be represented with a given sample rate, and it's convenient that it happens to be half. So when we discuss 44,100, the CD rate, then we're talking about a maximum high frequency of 22,050 hertz. But encoding schemes, to their advantage, often use filtering to limit the maximum frequency response of a file to reduce artifacts and to compress down the data. So, for example, when I did my review of the R1, I mentioned that the maximum frequency response was a very low frequency, up to about 16,000 hertz. And that's because that particular encoder limits the frequency range. In the case of the WS200S and the WS320M, or whatever they call it, their stated frequency response is something like 50 to 15,000. I'm not sure about the bottom, but I know the top is 15,000. And the reason they capped that top so aggressively is because of the encoder that they're using. So that is noticeable. When you begin to limit the upper frequencies, especially if you start limiting them at, say, you know, 15,000 or less, 12,000, you're going to notice an audible difference in the frequency content.
And what was the stated top on the DS2? Wasn't it in the 17s?
I don't recall.
I believe it was.
Now, so it's likely that the DS2 could do a little better in the high frequencies because they're using 128K BPS. Now, it's unfortunate that the response we got back from the query that Grant sent was just wrong, unfortunately. Olympus has chosen not to discuss bitrate in their literature, and I'm not sure why. But anybody can take one of their files and load it into a media player and get properties on it and see the bitrate. It's not a secret. And if you do the math, they're claiming 35 hours and 25 minutes or 35:15 or something on the WS320M. That if you do the math, you get a maximum in 1 gig of storage, which is what that particular product has, of about 37 hours. So it's reasonable that you'd have a little overhead. So 35 hours is just about right for a 64K BPS file on that kind of a device.
Now, KBPS only relates to encoded files, is that right? You don't have that on a WAV file.
You do, but it's irrelevant. I mean, people like Windows will tell you the KBPS of a WAV file if you read the status line or use the tooltip.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Like, it'll say 1411 KBPS or something like that. Bits per second always applies in when you're moving data around, but in uncompressed audio, we usually don't speak of bits per second. It applies, but it's just not a common way to express it.
Well, darn, I wished I had a clearer understanding of how this worked myself. I guess you're probably the only one in the audience that does, Rob. It's still confusing to me. I'm not getting something somewhere.
We need to, at some point, sit down and maybe write another letter, maybe try to get a different person over at Olympus, because it's pretty clear to me that if you buy the 320, you're going to get the same performance as the 200 in the area of frequency response and sound quality. Now, the person claimed that sound quality was related to the sample rate, and in a way it is, but that's just the high frequency content. You could have a really low bitrate file that has a high sample rate. So you could essentially have high frequency content in a horrible sounding file. The more you compress it, the more wobbly and watery and wavery it sounds.
Okay.
So there's all kinds of ways to mix and match these parameters, although we have generally practiced standards that people will do.
Well, I think that's a great idea that we can write Olympus another letter and get through to somebody that maybe knows a little more than whoever responded to that one from Grant. But I'm not sure it's going to make any difference. Somebody made a decision somewhere high up in the company that they were going to sacrifice the higher quality for longer play times.
Well, and unfortunately, we can speculate all we want, but people like us don't have a clue why this decision was made. Maybe it was a licensing arrangement gone bad.
That's true.
Maybe some guy at the company just wanted it that way. I'll tell you, I'm not trying to bash compression. Well, actually I am. The sooner we can get away from all these compression formats, the better off we're going to be. Now, it's not going to happen anytime soon. It will happen in our lifetimes, though. And MP3, WMA, OGG, and all these they're really a crutch. And they were great for the end user, but unfortunately, somebody's got to get paid. And the companies that are selling you these products are paying to bring you this compression technology. And that's sort of the downside of this kind of thing. And so as soon as the storage media become large enough that they can handle uncompressed audio, these things will be over.
That's a good point. So if we had a 10 gig WS5000S, we wouldn't even need to worry about WMA at all, huh?
Right. You could choose something reasonable, like maybe a 32,000 hertz sample rate, for example. That would be great for speech. You'd have a top of 16K. Be a little less than the CD quality, but it would save you a little space over the long run if you cared about that. 22050 might be a reasonable sample rate in a device like that as an option. And you can just do raw wave. I guess what I'm saying, basically, the long and short of it is, if you're concerned about compression and the way things sound, go buy a R1 or a MicroTrack or a Marantz or any of these other recorders that let you use uncompressed file formats or high bit rates.
They're not convenient to use or carry, though, you know? That's
MicroTrack is pretty convenient to carry. It may not be the solution for everybody, but it's pretty small. It's very small. A little thick, but quite small.
Yeah, I need to give that one another chance, I guess. That rumbling put me off so bad that...
We could insert, if you wish, the... original take. That rumble that we put in the last file was take two with the levels down substantially, but I did find the original recording with the clipping on the footstep.
Oh, good.
Actually, if you want to drop that in here now.
And this is that sample right here with the higher levels.
No air conditioners. Oh, yeah, he's got one of them down here. So I should be walking past. You should hear it on my right, up on the ceiling.
All right, so does that wrap it up on the bits per second versus samples per second versus maximum frequency discussion?
Well, I think you explained it. I perhaps am just not absorbent enough to take it all in and understand it properly.
Well, like I said, nobody's sitting here with a calculator doing all these, getting all this stuff exactly right. And I guess we could do a show like that if people are still a little unclear. But I'm fairly sure that the 320, though it has a nice 1 gig of storage, is still limited by the bit rate. And also, you're going to have a difference in performance of WMA versus MP3, which is kind of a whole other discussion. But
well, it doesn't record MP3, it just plays MP3.
Right. So when you compare, like, the iRiver...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
That's another factor. Like, you may be happy with your recordings at 64 kbps in an MP3 scenario.
Hmm.
But you might not be as happy, depending on your preferences and the way that and the differences with the WMA version.
And I guess, like you've said, it just depends on what you want to do with one of these things. You know,
yeah, there must be thousands and thousands of people that are happy with the Olympus products. I mean, obviously they meet the need, or they wouldn't be coming out with them.
Yeah, they're continuing to develop new ones all the time.
And I'm sure it's a really neat looking product. It has it has some beeps. Has, you know, a lot more feedback than some of these other ones do. They're some of the smallest recorders I've seen. I mean, they've got advantages. And if you're not interested in top quality audio, they also limit at the bottom of the, like I said, I think the bottom frequency response is around 50. So you're not going to have to worry about rumble.
Oh, I should try. Yeah. Well, and plus they've got the nice automatic gain control in there and limiting. So.
That's a really nice feature there. I think if you use it, put it on the high sensitivity, it's a little loud.
Yeah.
I think the low is probably better for most applications, unless you're going to record crickets.
Well, I got a fantastic recording of a train a few days ago using the DS2.
Okay.
And last night, I happened to be out doing looking at the Halloween decorations over here on Hillcrest, recorded it with the iRiver, and as we were coming home, a train came by, and you can definitely hear the difference. It clipped real badly with the iRiver. The rest of the recording was fantastic, but that limiting comes in handy, no doubt about it.
You might be able to pull back the gain a little bit on your iRiver. I don't know how often you clip during a typical session with the iRiver, but you might want to pull that back a couple notches. That would help, and obviously it might not give you the desired sound level you want, but
yeah,
it'd certainly help.
Okay, any other final words of wisdom for the Blind Cool Tech listening audience there, Rob?
No, I'm glad everybody's enjoying it, and I'm glad that healthy discussions have arisen, and that we have people interested in anything from what quality of sound am I going to get from this particular recorder to what can I do about accessibility issues on this particular recorder? So these are all good things.
Yeah, I hope we can make a difference. All right. Well, thank you for joining us, Rob.
All right.
We'll tell our Blind Cool Tech listeners good day for this session. If you'd like to comment, our audio line is at 206-984-9203. Email blindcooltech@gmail.com. Or check us out on the web at blindcooltech.com. Y'all have a good one, and we'll see you next time. And thank you, Rob.
All right.